Imagine finding out that the lock on your front door wasn't picked by a burglar, right? But that the actual factory that manufactured your lock was secretly compromised months ago.
Yeah, that is a terrifying thought.
Right. And it's not just your lock, it's like every lock in every home in every single country. You didn't do anything wrong, but the very infrastructure of your security was just fundamentally broken before it even reached you.
Exactly.
And that is exactly the reality the digital world woke up to in May 2026. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are pulling from a massive stack of sources today. We've got postmortem incident response reports, declassified developer forum logs, and this really comprehensive tick in game
A
analysis.
very detailed report.
It really is. And our mission today is to unpack one of the most devastating supply chain cyber attacks in history. We're talking about the CodeSiphon breach. We want to understand how the fundamental tools used to build modern software, specifically, we're talking about GitHub and VS Code, how they were weaponized against the very people who build our digital world.
Because, these tools, they are the absolute arteries of the global digital economy.
Yeah.
When those arteries are compromised, the contamination flows downstream into literally every piece of technology we rely on, and it goes completely unnoticed until the damage is already done.
And look, even if you have never written a line of code in your life, every app you use, every website you visit, every smart device in your home is built on the ecosystem that was compromised in this attack. Your digital life was essentially sitting right in the blast radius.
Sitting right in the crosshairs, absolutely.
Okay, let's unpack this because the top line numbers we are looking at in these incident reports, they are just staggering. In a span of basically 14 days, 5.3 million developers were affected globally.
Which is an insane scale.
Right. Over 180 terabytes of proprietary data were stolen. More than 80 major software extensions were infected. And the estimated financial fallout, it hit $3.5 billion.
Yeah, the sheer scale definitely dominates the headlines.
Yeah.
But the absolute precision of this attack is what really demands our attention. Well, this was not a smash and grab operation, right? It wasn't a brute force hack where someone just guessed a password. It was a highly sophisticated, multi-layered infiltration executed by a state-sponsored Advanced Persistent Threat Group, an APT.
Okay, an APT.
Right. They basically surgically altered the DNA of the software development process. And to do that, they had to bypass the world's most sophisticated security systems at Microsoft and GitHub.
And to understand how a $3.5 billion catastrophe happens, we really have to look at how they got past those defenses. Because they didn't attack the servers directly. Well, at least not at first. They went after the human element to find a blind spot, right?
Yeah, the reconnaissance phase is genuinely chilling when you read through the logs. The crisis became public in May 2026, but the attackers were laying the groundwork way earlier, like back in April.
Wow, a whole month before.
Exactly. And they weren't targeting, entry-level employees or spraying generic spam emails. They were likely scraping LinkedIn and mapping out internal organizational charts.
So they knew exactly who they were looking for.
Totally. They needed to find specific, senior GitHub engineers. They needed the people who held the absolute highest level of access to GitHub's CI/CD infrastructure.
Right, and CI/CD being continuous integration and continuous deployment. For anyone unfamiliar, you can think of that as the automated assembly lines of the software world where code is built, tested, and then shipped out to the public.
Spot on. And to breach those specific engineers, the attackers launched highly convincing, incredibly targeted phishing campaigns. They registered these fake domains that perfectly mimicked Microsoft's internal employee portals.
But wait, these are top-tier security engineers, you know. They aren't just using simple passwords. They have multi-factor authentication. We are constantly told that MFA is like the silver bullet for security. So how do you even bypass it?
That's a great question.
The source material mentions OAuth protocol abuse and man-in-the-middle attacks, but how does that actually work in practice, like mechanically?
Okay, so normally MFA is a fortress, right? You type a password, your authenticator app gives you a temporary 6-digit code, and you type that in.
Yeah, the little code that changes every 30 seconds.
Exactly. But in a man-in-the-middle attack, the hackers aren't trying to guess your code because they built a fake login page when the engineer typed in their username, password, and that temporary MFA code. The hacker's automated system just instantly grabbed that live code.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it submitted it to the real Microsoft login server on their behalf.
Like in real time.
In absolute real time. By doing this, the hackers stole the session token. You can think of a session token as essentially the digital VIP wristband that proves you've successfully logged in.
Okay, that makes sense.
They didn't break the encryption, you know. They just tricked the human into handing them an active session before the MFA code expired.
That is terrifying, because once they have that VIP wristband, the system just treats them as a trusted senior engineer. They are completely inside the perimeter.
They're a ghost in the machine at that point.
Yeah. But the tech in-game analysis notes they still needed to escalate their privileges to do the real damage, which they accomplished by exploiting a zero-day vulnerability in GitHub's cloud services, a flaw that absolutely nobody knew existed at the time.
Right. And the way they used that zero-day access is basically a masterclass in stealth. They knew that thousands of developers are constantly reviewing popular open source code.
Yeah, the whole many eyes make all bugs shallow idea.
Exactly. So if the attackers simply added a malicious line of code to a public repository, someone in the community would spot it almost immediately.
So they didn't touch the public code at all?
Nope, not a single line.
They found a loophole in the packaging stage. It's like a pharmaceutical company making a life-saving medication.
Okay, I like this analogy.
The medicine is rigorously tested, the public inspectors check the raw ingredients, and everyone gives it the green light. But the attackers didn't poison the ingredients. They slipped a poison pill into the bottle on the automated assembly line after the safety inspector walked away.
Right.
Like right before the tamper-proof safety seal was applied. They injected the malware during the final process where the code is bundled into an extension for the VS Code marketplace.
What's fascinating here is how effectively they exploited the concept of a blind spot within the developer community. The open source world relies heavily on reviewing source code to establish trust.
Right, they trust what they can read.
Exactly. But because the attackers bypassed the source code entirely and injected their malicious module into the final packaged version of the extension, the developers looking at the public repositories found absolutely no signs of malware.
Because it wasn't there yet.
Exactly. The hack thrived on blind trust. Developers just assumed that if the code on GitHub was clean, the bundle package they downloaded from the marketplace was equally clean. They didn't realize the assembly line itself was compromised.
Wow. Okay, so we know how they slipped the poison pill into the bottle, but what exactly was hiding inside these trusted packages once millions of developers hit the download button? Let's get into the anatomy of the malware itself, which security experts dubbed CodeSiphon, or APT-VSC-2026.
CodeSiphon was designed for absolute silence. When a developer installed an infected VS Code extension, the malware utilized a pre-install script, or like a hidden dependency.
So it starts running immediately.
Yeah, but quietly. It didn't immediately start stealing large files or making a lot of noise that a firewall would catch. First, it just sent a tiny encrypted beacon out to the attacker's command and control servers, their C2 servers.
Just a little ping.
Right. It essentially whispered a status update, like, I'm in, here's the operating system, the processor type, and a list of the antivirus software currently running on this machine. What are my orders?
And the reports emphasize that it operated filelessly in memory to evade detection, meaning it avoided writing its core malicious instructions to the computer's hard drive at all.
Yeah, which is incredibly sneaky.
But here's where it gets really interesting to me. If it's only operating in the RAM, doesn't it just disappear the second the developer turns off their computer for the night? Like, how does it maintain a persistent presence without writing a file that an antivirus scanner would catch?
That's the genius of fileless malware. It uses built-in tools that the operating system already trusts.
Like what?
Instead of dropping a traditional executable file onto the desktop or, you know, into a system folder, it might hide its code inside the system registry. Or it might create a hidden window scheduled task.
Oh, I see.
So when the computer boots up, the operating system itself is basically tricked into reloading the malicious script directly back into the system memory.
Wow. So the computer is infecting itself every time you turn it on.
Exactly. And to a traditional antivirus looking for known bad files on a hard drive, everything looks perfectly normal.
Mm.
Furthermore, CodeSiphon was environmentally aware.
Environmentally aware? What does that mean?
It means it checked its surroundings. If it checked the system and realized it was sitting inside a virtual machine, which is a sandbox environment typically used by security researchers to analyze malware, it would immediately halt its execution and play dead.
Play dead. That is wild. So if this malware is practically invisible, hiding in the registry, halting if it detects an analyst, and living inside the most trusted tools in the industry, how did anyone actually realize they were infected?
Well, no software is completely perfect, mm-hmm. You know, especially when deployed at this massive scale. Around late April and early May, GitHub's internal security team started noticing unusual encrypted data traffic flowing out of their CI/CD servers.
Okay, so they saw the leaks.
Yeah, and at the exact same time, out in the wild, the developer community started experiencing friction. Around May 1st, prominent developers took to technical forums reporting these unexplained failed compilations.
Like the code just wouldn't build.
Right. Their code, which was perfectly fine the day before, just wouldn't work. Others noticed strange, temporary log files appearing and then suddenly disappearing on their local machines.
It's like finding a few loose screws on the floor of a massive factory. Individually, you might brush it off as normal wear and tear, right?
And initially, the community did brush those ripples off. They assumed it was just a buggy update to some extension. But when you aggregate millions of these minor glitches across developer forums, a clear pattern emerges.
The puzzle pieces start fitting together.
Exactly. The sheer volume of complaints basically forced security researchers to take a closer look at the memory processes of VS Code itself, which is when they finally discovered the hidden beaconing.
And once CodeSiphon got its hooks in, the payload it delivered was just devastating. Looking at the tech in-game analysis, the attackers were scraping GitHub and SSH credentials. They were pulling API tokens for major cloud services like AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud.
Which is the keys to the kingdom.
Literally. Now, for the non-developers listening, think of API tokens as the digital VIP passes that let different software programs talk to each other without needing a human to type in a password. If a hacker gets your AWS API token, they essentially have the keys to your company's entire cloud infrastructure.
They own your cloud.
Right. And they were even hunting for cryptocurrency wallets. But the most damaging part, I think, they were actively stealing the proprietary source code that these infected developers were working on for their respective employers.
Yeah, and the blast radius is almost impossible to fully quantify because of the specific extensions the attackers chose to compromise. They didn't target obscure niche tools.
No, they went for the big ones.
They targeted the foundational pillars of modern programming. They hit the Python IntelliSense extension, which had over 50 million installs.
50 million? Unbelievable.
They compromised JavaScript and TypeScript Essentials, sitting at over 40 million installs.
Mm.
Docker integration. GitLens, these are tools that nearly every professional developer on the planet relies on daily to write, debug, and manage their code.
It really highlights the fragile complexity of the modern software supply chain, because when a developer downloads an extension to help them write Python code, that extension usually relies on dozens of other hidden dependencies, right?
Right. Little pieces of code written by other people, which have their own dependencies.
It's an incredibly tangled web. And the attackers leveraged that interconnected web to push CodeSiphon onto the machines of 5.3 million developers across over 120 countries in literally a matter of days.
So you have this highly sophisticated malware sitting silently on millions of machines, quietly phoning home with the credentials to thousands of corporate networks. When the industry finally realizes the scale of the compromise, I mean, it triggers an unprecedented global reaction.
Yeah, the incident reports call the period between May 9th and May 19th the war room phase. I mean, how do you even begin to contain a breach when the very tools you need to fix the problem might also be compromised?
It was absolute chaos.
GitHub and Microsoft had to publicly confirm the attack, teaming up with CrowdStrike, Mandiant, the FBI, and Interpol. They pulled over 80 extensions from the marketplace immediately to stop the bleeding.
Just yanked them offline.
Exactly. They had to automatically revoke countless compromised API tokens. And Microsoft rushed out a custom tool called the CodeSiphon Scanner for Windows, Linux, and Mac OS.
And that scanner was critical. Because the malware was fileless, traditional antivirus couldn't clean it. The CodeSiphon scanner was specifically designed to hunt for those subtle memory signatures and registry hooks we discussed earlier.
It was the only way to find it.
Yeah, it finally allowed companies to figure out if they were actively hemorrhaging data.
So the cleanup operation was massive, but to truly understand the historical significance of CodeSiphon, the take and game analysis draws parallels to previous watershed moments in cybersecurity. Specifically, they bring up the SolarWinds attack in 2020 and the Log4Shell zero day in 2021.
Right.
And I actually want to push back on that comparison slightly based on the raw numbers in the source material.
Okay, let's hear it.
So the report notes that SolarWinds caused over $10 billion in estimated damages. Log4Shell was estimated between $10 to $20 billion. CodeSiphon's estimated financial loss is listed at $3.5 billion. Now, $3.5 billion is undeniably a massive number, right?
Of course.
But if it caused less than half the immediate financial damage of SolarWinds, why is CodeSiphon universally described as an event that basically shook the pillars of software development?
That is a crucial distinction to make. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the severity of CodeSiphon isn't just about the immediate dollar amount, it's about the fundamental nature of the target.
What do you mean?
SolarWinds was a devastating attack, yes, but it primarily targeted the consumers of enterprise software, government agencies, large corporations. It compromised their internal servers.
Okay, I follow.
CodeSiphon, on the other hand, hit the creators of the software directly. It compromised the very factories where the digital world is built.
So they didn't just hack a bank. They hacked the blueprints and the people who build the vaults for every bank in the world.
Exactly that. By compromising the local machines of 5.3 million developers, the attackers didn't just steal data. They gained the capability to silently inject backdoors into the proprietary code of thousands of other companies worldwide.
Wow.
Think about it. A developer working for a major financial institution, or a healthcare provider, or a power grid operator could be infected with CodeSiphon. The malware could then secretly inject a vulnerability into the code that developer is actively writing.
So the developer doesn't even know they're writing a backdoor.
Exactly. When that code is finished and published by the bank or the power company, the attackers now have a permanent backdoor into that critical infrastructure. The $3.5 billion is just the immediate cleanup cost to the developer machines. The true long-tail damage is the existential threat to the entire downstream supply chain.
Man, that reframes the stakes entirely. Because the foundation of the software world was shaken that deeply, the industry realized they couldn't just apply a Band-Aid. By June 2026, the entire ecosystem had to fundamentally rewrite the rulebook on how code is shared, built, and trusted.
It was a monumental shift.
The source material outlines a dramatic shift to what they call the new normal.
The fundamental philosophy had to change. We saw a complete paradigm shift from a culture of implicit trust to a culture of explicit mandatory verification.
And the technical changes alone are massive. First, digital signing. Before May 2026, less than 30% of VS Code extensions were digitally signed. It was basically treated as an optional best practice. After CodeSiphon, it became strictly mandatory.
Digital signing is crucial because it acts as a cryptographic wax seal. It proves mathematically that the package you are downloading was genuinely created by the verified author and hasn't been tampered with by a man in the middle during the distribution process.
And if the seal is broken?
If the seal is broken, the system just flat out refuses to install it.
Wow. They also introduced mandatory independent security audits for any extension with over 100,000 installs. You can no longer just write a popular tool in your basement and push it to millions of people without a reputable security firm verifying your code.
Right, the Wild West days are over.
Yeah, and they brought in AI behavior analysis to watch how extensions act in real time, looking for suspicious network communications. And they mandated something called an SBBOM, or a software bill of materials.
You can think of an SBOM as a nutritional label for software.
A nutritional label?
Okay. Yeah, it explicitly declares every single hidden dependency and third-party library inside an extension. It removes the blind spots that allowed CodeSiphon to hide in that tangled web of the supply chain. Plus, Microsoft rolled out a new $250,000 bug bounty to financially incentivize independent security researchers to find these flaws before state-sponsored groups do.
That's a serious bounty. But, you know, the source material points out that the technological shifts, while impressive, are actually secondary to the cultural shift.
This is the most important part, I think.
Yeah, because for a decade, the prevailing mantra in software development, particularly in DevOps, was move fast and break things. Speed was the ultimate metric. How quickly can we push this update? How fast can we deploy this new feature to the users?
And speed is often the enemy of security. The tech and game analysts identified this DevOps culture of speed as a core reason the attack succeeded so wildly.
Because everyone was rushing.
Exactly. The immense pressure to release updates quickly meant that automated pipelines were handling everything, and thorough human security reviews were frequently bypassed. After CodeSiphon, the new cultural mandate became move fast but secure things.
Move fast but secure things. It's catchy.
Right. Developers were forced to embrace the principle of least privilege, only giving tools the exact permissions they need to function, and absolutely nothing more. And we saw a massive industry-wide push toward hardware security keys, like YubiKeys.
Now, how do those hardware keys actually stop the kind of attack that started all this, the phishing thing?
So a hardware key physically locks down authentication. Unlike a six-digit code on your phone that you type into a fake website, a hardware key uses cryptography to verify the actual domain you are logging into.
Oh, so the key itself checks the website.
Exactly. If an engineer plugs their key in while on a fake Microsoft login page, the hardware key recognizes that the underlying URL doesn't match the real Microsoft server, and it simply refuses to authenticate. It completely neutralizes the man-in-the-middle phishing tactic that initiated the entire breach.
So what does this all mean for the everyday developer? The report outlines a pros and cons battle, and I think it raises a critical dilemma. With all these new mandatory audits, strict access restrictions, hardware keys, and warning labels popping up every time a developer tries to install something, isn't there a massive risk of what the industry calls security fatigue?
Oh, it's a huge risk.
Are we just creating an environment where developers are so overwhelmed by compliance pop-ups that they become numb to them and just blindly click accept to get their work done? Will the operational friction become so heavy that people just start finding new, dangerous shortcuts?
You've highlighted the most significant ongoing challenge of the post-CodeSiphon era. The industry successfully solved the immediate technical vulnerabilities, but to do so, they introduced immense operational friction.
Yeah, it slows everything down.
But the concern over security fatigue is entirely valid. Yes, the ecosystem is fundamentally safer today. Executing a CodeSiphon-style attack would be exponentially harder because of the mandatory signing and SVM requirements. But the complexity and the sheer financial cost of software development have permanently increased.
I can imagine.
Developers are exhausted by the constant compliance hurdles, and small, independent, open-source maintainers often struggle to afford the time and resources required for mandatory security audits.
It is a remarkably heavy tax to place on innovation.
It is, but it's the required price of living in a hyper-connected, digital-first world. The attackers will continuously evolve, you know. They will study these new defenses and find novel ways to bypass them. Security isn't a static destination you arrive at and stop. It is a continuous, exhausting arms race.
To wrap up our deep dive today, we've traced a journey that started with a few highly targeted, incredibly deceptive phishing emails sent to senior GitHub engineers and ended in a $3.5 billion global crisis.
It's wild to think about.
Right. The attackers exploited a blind spot in the packaging process, slipped a poison pill into the most trusted tools in the developer ecosystem, and walked away with 180 terabytes of proprietary data from over 120 countries. They permanently altered the DNA of software development, forcing the entire industry to abandon the move fast and break things mentality for a much stricter, heavier reality of mandatory audits, digital signatures, and zero trust verification.
The industry's response was robust, and the structural safeguards put in place are commendable. But the details in the source material leave us with a lingering, deeply unsettling reality that we really have to acknowledge before we close.
Yeah, the structural damage. It's like discovering the steel mill that supplied the beams for a massive new skyscraper used faulty metal.
Right.
You can shut down the steel mill, fire the inspectors, and fix the manufacturing process going forward. But that skyscraper is already built.
Precisely. We discussed how CodeSiphon possessed the capability to secretly inject malicious code dormant backdoors into the proprietary projects that infected developers were actively working on. Now, consider the timeline of the breach. We had 5.3 million developers infected for up to 14 days. For two full weeks, these developers were building, compiling, and shipping code for their respective companies all around the globe.
Oh, man.
The massive cleanup operation successfully removed the malware from the developers' local machines. But what about the millions of lines of code they shipped during those 2 weeks?
Right. Where did it go?
How many downstream apps, how many smart home devices, how many enterprise platforms currently running in the world today might be quietly carrying a dormant CodeSiphon backdoor just waiting to be activated by a command server?
That is a sobering question to leave on. As the digital ecosystem grows infinitely more complex, relying on millions of interconnected open source parts, can we ever truly be certain that the foundation beneath us is secure? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the CodeSiphon catastrophe. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and never take the safety of your digital infrastructure for granted.